This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, Tuesday afternoon, July 23rd. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart, back after some time off. Glad to be back on the Noon Business Hour, and thank you for joining us today. It's not too early to start getting ready for Halloween. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, owners of the United Center plan a $7 billion redevelopment of the 55 acres around the arena, featuring a music hall, hotel, and apartments. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Danny Ecker, reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Danny, thank you for joining us today. 1901 Project, that is the official name of this development that plans to radically redevelop the parking lots around the United Center. And if you had a nose for permit applications, you kind of had a sense that this was coming together for at least a year now.
Yeah, well, the owners of the United Center, the Reinsdorf family and the Wirtz family, have been buying up land around in the vicinity of the arena. And, of course, they have owned for many, many years the parking lots, which is just a sea of parking lots that sort of encircle the venue. And the question for a long time has been, what are they going to do with these things? You know, obviously, in today's day and age, professional sports stadiums are, you know, don't just sort of live on an island. They really are part of these larger mixed use real estate developments. And the owners of the arena are now basically saying, okay, it's time. It's time to build up this area. And here's our master plan over the next decade, which includes a music hall and retail buildings and thousands of apartments.
And this is more than just creating a West Side version of Wrigleyville. I think we've talked about this before. As revenue from cable television begins to decline, the teams have to find a way to make up that money some way and somehow. And part of that is just developing the area around the facility and turning that into a 24/7, 365 money-making operation.
Well, right. There's all kinds of new revenue opportunities that it opens up with sponsorships and just people coming to games earlier and staying later, whether it's games or other events. And they can hold all kinds of, I mean, they're talking about this first phase having a 6,000 seat music hall. So, you know, getting them into really another level of the music industry that they're already in with these concerts. And, you know, they've been doing fine. These teams are doing just fine revenue wise anyway. But, you know, there's all kinds of ways to activate this. And certainly, as the teams will tell you, you know, this is also about, kind of following the momentum coming west from downtown through the Fulton Market District and West Loop. There are apartment buildings that have gone up in the last couple of years that are just a few blocks away from the United Center. So this is sort of in the course of development. We're talking about billions of dollars in investment in a part of the West Side that has not historically seen this level of economic development.
Now, are the Wirtz family and Michael Reinsdorf, are they putting up their own money for this venture?
That's what they're saying. It's a privately financed project. I'm sure they will have other development partners potentially as they go about this over the years to come. They have left the door open. They've said they're not seeking public financing, but they've certainly left the door open to natural public infrastructure projects. They're asking for potentially having another CTA station along the Pink Line that goes by the arena. There's a TIF district that is actually due to expire soon that runs up in that area. And so there's certainly going to be a role of the public to play in this broader development like there would be for any mega project. But they are not calling for anything specific at this point.
Now, very quickly, Danny, if Michael Reinsdorf is willing to put up private financing to redevelop the area around the United Center, what message does that send to state lawmakers who had to talk to his dad, Jerry, who had a $2 billion ask for a new White Sox stadium?
That question came up today, actually, at a news conference announcing this, and they basically just said, look, let's remember that these are two entirely separate entities. The United Center joint venture is owned by the Wirtz's and the Reinsdorf's, and, of course, the White Sox are a Reinsdorf team. So it is certainly a question that you think is going to become this part of this broader conversation happening around public financing for a White Sox stadium. So I'm sure a lot of more discussion to come on that.
Danny Ecker, reporter, Crane Chicago Business, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, it may be July, but a popular Halloween treat is already on sale.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
For candy makers, retailers, and Halloween enthusiasts, the season starts now with Home Depot's elaborate spooky displays and Reese's peanut butter pumpkins already available. Joining us with the details is Bob Phibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor in New York, the website Retail Doctor. Bob, thank you for joining us today. And this is great news for me personally, Bob, because I was in the market for a 25-foot tall Home Depot skeleton, and you're telling me that these are now on sale.
It's bootastic.
but there is some real, you know, like dollars and cents considerations here, because more and more Halloween is turning into one of the biggest retail holidays of the year. It's up there with Christmas. It's up there with Valentine's Day. So if you want to get a jump, if you want to appeal to the people who want to get a jump on the season, now's as good a time as any.
Well, here's the thing. Halloween is selling scarcity. And while some people think Halloween creep is creepy, it's great. I mean, it's really no different than Christmas creep. The whole idea is that if I get you to buy my product first, I've taken that money out of your wallet for you not to spend with my competitor. So it's already all online. So why not buy it in the store?
Now, is there, just in terms of getting a jump on the season, because you're seeing this in other aspects of the fall, especially, for example, Starbucks, the pumpkin spice lattes, those roll out in early September. You could be wearing shorts and a T-shirt and walking around drinking your pumpkin spice latte from Starbucks. So clearly, the marketplace research indicates that some people may be in a fall mindset, even though it may still be the dog days of summer.
Well, I think the big issue is we're all trying to escape reality, my friend. There's so much bad news and horrible stuff around that the one place you can do is dress up and pretend you're somebody else or decorate your house or have your kids have a memory. That's going to have staying power, certainly, for the next several years, that's for sure.
Now, one other thing, one other staple of Halloween that is really showing up in the stores is Reese's rolling out the peanut butter cup pumpkins. Now, this may be a way for some people to say they're being proactive and they're just jumping out ahead of the marketplace on their Halloween candy. But how many people in that segment of early Halloween shoppers are simply just buying the bag of pumpkin-shaped peanut butter cups so they can consume it and then go back?
That's exactly it, my friend. You've given away the retail retailer's secret. Absolutely. Buy early so that you'll come back for more. And, you know, what I like about Hershey's or Reese's is they say it's never too early.
So I guess that means we're going to see the Christmas tree-shaped peanut butter cups come out sometime around Labor Day.
I'm hoping any day now.
I mean, look, there are addictive items in this world, Bob, some legal, some illegal. And unfortunately, my kryptonite is Reese's peanut butter cups. So now that you've told me that the Halloween shaped peanut butter cups are in the stores, I may give that rack a second look.
Limited time. And remember that it's always about finding the good in it. Look, I would rather see full priced nice Reese's pumpkins than see half off Valentine's candy in July, wouldn't you? So think of the alternative.
Bob Phibb, CEO, The Retail Doctor in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, we'll take a look at how the June slump in housing sales could be pointing towards a possible buyer's market.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
June's drop in home sales and a nearly 25% increase in available supply indicates a shift towards a buyer's market in housing nationwide. Joining us to put it in perspective is Steve Kurtz, Chicago Chicago-based real estate and housing expert. Steve, thank you for joining us today. What does this mean for the for someone who's going out into the housing market? Does this mean that they can find better deals compared to just a couple of months ago, or are they still going to be paying elevated prices compared to, let's say, before COVID-19?
Yeah, good afternoon, Rob. I think what we're looking at here is actually kind of a tale of two markets. The national numbers are encouraging, even though sales were down. Inventory was up quite substantially, as you point out, and that obviously gives buyers who are getting into the market some additional choices. So, and that inventory is actually the highest we've seen since really the height of the pandemic in May of 2020. So I think that at least on the national level, we're seeing a slow shift to a buyer's market. But unfortunately, that has not translated to Illinois and the Chicago area.
And why is that?
Well, we're seeing even more sales declines. Illinois saw almost 17% fewer home sales. And at the same time, both nationally and here, we're still seeing record price increases. The state of Illinois median price in June was its highest on record. And the inventory here locally is also not jumping like it is nationally. We've only seen a very small increase in home inventory, even with these big declines in sales.
When we talk about this national increase in available inventory, 23.4% compared to a year ago, is this the result of people finally moving out of their homes, or is it a function of a red-hot home building market?
Well, it's a function, I think, more of the fact that the sales have declined and the inventory goes up, obviously, as nobody is buying it. It just sits on the market. And then anything new that comes on the market gets added to it. Also, you know, you have to recognize these higher prices. Mortgage rates are still stubbornly hanging around 7%. And those two things combine to make it very difficult for a lot of buyers to even get out there and be in the market.
Now, there is some easing in the 10-year rate, which could translate into some relief on the mortgage rate side of the equation. And it seems like the smart money is once again looking at the potential for two interest rate cuts this year. What would that mean for the housing market if you do get an up to a half a percentage point interest rate cut later this year?
That would obviously help anything to ease this affordability burden, especially for first-time buyers, would be welcome. And, you know, I think that you'll also see a seasonal decline in prices now. We've probably passed the spring home buying peak, and so experts are saying we could probably see home prices ease a little bit in the next few months. So if you combine those two things, it's really going to be a better market for the buyers perhaps coming up in 2, 3, or 4 months. I know that won't be the peak home buying season, but if you can afford to wait around for that amount of time, you know, you're likely to have more choice and perhaps to get a better deal.
Steve Kirch, Chicago-based real estate and housing expert.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The head of the Secret Service has resigned 10 days after the attempted assassination of former President Trump at a campaign appearance in Pennsylvania. An investigation is continuing into a shooting on Chicago's far south side involving an off-duty police officer. It's Travel Tuesday on the Noon Business Hour. We'll look at why it's important to start booking fall travel plans now. Plus, A popular Chicago business that shut down in April is applying for new liquor licenses. WBBM Business, the markets are mixed. The Dow is down 20 points. The NASDAQ up 8. The S&P 500 down 2. 82 degrees right now in Chicago under partly sunny skies. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle has resigned amid scrutiny of security lapses related to the recent assassination attempt of former President Trump. The move comes as lawmakers and an internal government watchdog move forward with investigations into the agency's handling of Mr. Trump's protection and how a gunman shot and wounded the 2024 Republican presidential candidate at a rally in Pennsylvania earlier this month. Lawmakers were especially angered by her unwillingness to answer many of their questions during a House Oversight Committee hearing yesterday. The Civilian Office of Police Accountability is investigating a shooting involving an off-duty police officer on Chicago's far south side. It happened around 5:30 this morning near 108th and Campbell in the Beverly neighborhood, and neighbors told police the officer, who lives on the block, was confronted by several people and then got into an exchange of gunfire. No injuries were reported. One person was detained, but the other fled in a dark-colored sedan. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are mixed right now. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial in New York. Art, thank you for joining us today. And kind of a ho-hum day of trading so far. It seems like the three major indices trading close to the flat line after some positive activity earlier this morning.
Yeah, I would tell you this. We're in the heart of earnings season right now. And what you'll notice about that is you tend to have individual stories that can move around quite a bit. Spotify is up about 12%. UPS is down about 10% or so. MSCI is down about 10%. So you get strong individual company moves that tend to neutralize the broader index itself. So today is the busiest day that we've had so far this week in terms of earnings. We get about 125 S&P 500 companies reporting this week. And the narrative tends to shift. We've got very light economic data except for the PCE later in the week. So it's all about the micro versus the macro. And I think you're just seeing the volatility really show up in individual names, but not showing up at the index level.
What are some of the earnings reports so far that really stick out for you? Because it would seem that on the plus side, General Motors revising its guidance upwards this year, definitely a good sign, especially for a car market that's taken its lumps over the last couple of years with supply chain issues and so on and so forth. But then you have UPS posting second quarter results that miss on both the top and the bottom line. And could that be an economic bellwether?
Yeah, and I would say normally we look at the logistics and transports as an economic bellwether, unless we take a step back and look at consumption patterns by consumers right now that are overweighting services and activities and experiences versus goods. We still haven't gotten back to that sort of pre-pandemic level of normal consumption patterns. Remember, Rob, we spent the better part of 2 years only consuming goods because we couldn't get out and about. Once we could, we're over-indexing services and activities and experiences. So that's not good if you're used to delivering a certain number of packages. And I think that's what's adversely affecting UPS for the most part. But I think that if you look at Spotify, you know, that's an experience and people are willing to pay for it. So last week's June retail sales really proves that the consumer is spending. It's just a function of looking closer at what they're spending on. As it pertains to General Motors, couldn't be better news for a company that's doing the best they can in a market that's difficult with high interest rates. But of the OEMs, they certainly seem to be doing the best job at cranking out and actually delivering what the consumer wants, which increasingly has become the hybrid and certainly trucks and SUVs.
I know the markets hate uncertainty, but the past 10 days have been head spinning as far as current events are concerned. And I know we deal with the numbers on the noon business hour. We're not going to get in the business of politics or endorsements or what people believe and why you should believe that. But if you're trying to suss out uncertainty, how are you able to make heads or tails of the past week? Or do you even, as an analyst, if you're an investor, should you even jump into the weeds of what happened over the past 10 days?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The old saying that goes something like this, there's sometimes when nothing happens for decades, and there's sometimes decades happen in a week. And I'd certainly say that's appropriate for the last 10 days. There's certainly been a lot of things that would cause a great deal of uncertainty. But in the news cycle that you're very familiar with, a lot of things get resolved pretty quickly. Assassination attempt, thank God, that wasn't successful. A president backing out of a race, and I would argue that likely reduced some uncertainty because that was a coin flip going into the after the debate. So now we know who the two candidates are. That's removed some of that uncertainty about that, and I think markets are clearly focused in the here and now on earnings and the economic data and the pace of economic growth and perhaps the Fed cutting rates in September. Probably won't even think about this election, as investors generally don't, until after Labor Day. So I think right now it's all about the, you know, things we should be focusing on, which is the economy and what kind of earnings that can drive. And the earnings season thus far has been certainly better than had been anticipated. So we I think that's the focus right now.
Basically, don't get too far out over your skis. And that's good advice, not only for investing, but for life as well.
I think that's right. You sound so well grounded after your vacation. I love that quote.
Well, I was going to say, Art, the lesson is I should never leave because apparently I left on July 12th, and then all sorts of crazy stuff happened, and I guess calm will reign once again now that I'm back on the job.
Well, I was happy to hear that you don't get another vacation day until sometime at the end of the year. So hopefully things will calm down with your presence.
Well, thank you very much, Art, and I won't let you down. Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial in New York, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in our Travel Tuesday segment, we'll take a look at why it's important to start booking your fall vacations now.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday. Book your fall trips now. Midwest destinations are prime spots for stunning fall colors, and they're filling up fast. Joining us to explain is Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief of SheBuysTravel.com in Chicago. Cindy, thank you for joining us today. And you never really get off the treadmill, do you? Once you're done with that summer vacation, or maybe you're planning for that summer trip right now, the moment you get back, you got to think about fall.
Well, those of us who love travel are always thinking about it anyway, so that makes perfect sense to me. But I think the thing that we want to keep in mind is there are different ways to travel. So if you really are committed that you have to stay at the State Park Lodge at the height of fall foliage season, you better be booking it now. If you're flexible and you don't really care where you stay because you're going to drive to the state park to see the pretty fall colors, you have a lot more flexibility and maybe you can wait a little longer. But what we're finding and what the experts are saying, you know, the world is a little unstable and the hurricanes are coming a little faster and a little stronger, that people are pulling back from the big vacations and they want to travel more locally. So what that means is demand for Midwest vacation spots, hotel rooms, Airbnbs, that sort of thing, is going to fill up this fall.
Travel Tuesday is sponsored by Preflight Airport Parking. We're talking with Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief of SheBuysTravel.com in Chicago, about those fall-colored trips around the Midwest. Do you have to do a little more homework, too? You got to check in with the Morton Arboretum or an arborist somewhere so that you make sure you time that fall colors trip for whenever the fall colors are peaking, whether it's in Illinois, Wisconsin, or Michigan?
Right, because fall colors are dependent on a lot of things, especially climate and rainfall. So there are websites that will track it. The state DNRs, the Departments of Natural Resources, put out fall foliage prediction maps, so you can track that. My big recommendation for, especially for something like fall colors where you want to try and hit the peak, is to book now, but book something that's refundable. So if it gets to, you know, the end of September and all of a sudden it looks like the leaves are not going to be in full color during the first week of October, you can get your money back and maybe try to rebook. The other advantage to those of us who aren't as big of planners is because people book refundable hotel rooms, what that means is when it's the, you know, sort of first week in October and you're like, hey, I can take a couple of days off, let's head to Mackinac Island or Northern Michigan and see what we can see. People who have canceled their refundable vacations, you know, that can open up hotel rooms. So just because you haven't booked ahead, don't despair. You have a chance that when it gets closer, somebody else will have canceled and you can jump in and snap up that room.
That said, if you do go to Mackinac the last minute, and even if you get the hotel room, you could find yourself in dire straits because all the horses have been rented.
Suppose then you just have to rent a bike and ride around the island or take a nice walk. It's a lovely walk around the island.
It is one of the prettiest places on earth. Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief of SheBuysTravel.com in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, Foxtrot, a fan favorite, making a comeback. We've got the details.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Foxtrot, which had an almost cult-like following, is applied for liquor licenses at four Chicago locations, signaling its revival after abruptly shutting down in April. Joining us with the latest is Ali Marotti, restaurants and retail reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Ali, thank you for joining us today. And the application for liquor licenses, what does this tell us about Foxtrot 2.0?
Yeah, so it tells us probably the four of the locations that they're planning on reopening. You know, the founder, Mike Lavatola, had told me earlier this summer that they were planning on reopening about a dozen in Chicago. So now we kind of know what, at least four of those locations, and that some of them will have outdoor patios probably, and that they will continue to have that, you know, ability to pop in and drink wine with your cheese that you've bought at Foxtrot that they had previously.
Now, this reminds me of Mariano's when it first opened about 14 years ago, when it was actually owned by Bob Mariano. There were some Mariano's locations in Chicago in particular that had wine bars where you could either have a glass of wine and go shopping or, as you mentioned, enjoy the olives and cheese that you just purchased with a glass of wine. So this is not entirely a groundbreaking concept.
No, it's not. And like I said, you know, Foxtrot previously had this ability to where they've got a coffee bar, you know, in the morning, or they had that. And then in the afternoon kind of transitioned to a place where you could either buy a bottle of wine and kind of take it to go, or you could get a glass, a pour from the bar as well. But to that note, you know, we do know that the Dom's location, which both Dom's locations were also shut down earlier this year, along with all the Foxtrot locations, because they were sister retailers with the same parent company that has since declared bankruptcy. There is a new grocer that's coming in and a new chain that's taking over one of those leases, and they also applied for a similar on-premise liquor license there. So we will probably see a similar program to what you're describing at this new grocery store that's going to open up in the fall, we're told.
Is this the play in the grocery space? Because you have the grocery giants. You have the Albertsons. You have the Krogers. You have CNS wholesale retailers coming in that will take some of the spun-off Mariano stores, the places where you go for your weekly shopping trip. But if you want to get just a thing or two or just something that you like, turning that grocery store trip into an experience more so than an errand could be a point of differentiation.
It is, and that's a great point, right? So we know that in this country, Walmart is the biggest seller of groceries, and it is very hard for basically any other store besides, you know, Mariano's parent Kroger or Jewel Osco parent Albertsons to compete on pricing because they have the economies of scale, right? They can kind of haggle cheaper prices with the big manufacturers. Anybody that's lesser scale than those places has to find another way to compete. And typically that's in the experience, right? So people are maybe coming to you not because you have the lowest prices on groceries, but because it's a more pleasant experience that you're getting. And perhaps getting a glass of rosé while you shop is part of that.
Ali Marotti, restaurants and retail reporter, Crane Chicago Business, thank you for joining us today. If you missed any part of the Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Odyssey app.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.